Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. One of the organizations that's truly on the front lines in the ongoing battle against poverty in our community is Urban Ministries of Wake County. Now celebrating its 40th year of combating hunger, homelessness, and lack of access to health care, Urban Ministries serves thousands of Wake County's most vulnerable residents with an array of vital services that many can find in no other place. Not surprisingly, the challenges of performing this difficult work have only been enhanced during the pandemic. But as the organization's executive director, Dr. Peter Morris, told me earlier this month, COVID-19 has also brought out the best in a lot of Urban Ministries' friends and supporters.
Well, Dr. Peter Morris, it's great to have you back with us. Welcome to News and Views.
It's always great to be here. Thanks so much, Rob.
I think maybe the last time we talked, we hoped perhaps we'd be a little further along in surmounting the pandemic, but we remain in the midst of it, even though there does seem to be some light at the end of the tunnel. How are things going at Urban Ministries? How are y'all coping?
I guess what I'd say is really a shout out to the people of Wake County, because the generosity and the spirit of volunteerism has just been remarkable, not only for Urban Ministries, but for many nonprofits in the community. The amount of donations that came our way, and not just directed donations towards food or directed donations towards the homeless, but just general donations from people across the political spectrum, quite frankly, be it businesses, be it individuals, be it grants. We saw a tremendous need in all of our programs, and we saw a tremendous response from donors, so that we have not lacked from money to be able to respond to the need. There have been times when we've worried just a little bit, and then another donation would come in. So a shout out that in this time of need, people weren't blind to the need, and the donations came. And I think many nonprofits are able to say that's what happened to them too. So it's really been quite remarkable.
That's wonderful news, and we hope very much that that continues, and we can maybe even aid you in that. Remind our listeners a little bit about some of the services that Urban Ministries provide. You have a food pantry. There's actually a shelter you run. Talk to us about, you know, how those are coping.
I think we use our hunger and nutrition program, which is our food pantry, as our barometer of what's going on in the community, because one of the first things that happens is that people need to put food on the table. And we went from serving 40 families a day in what was a state-of-the-art client choice pantry to having to not be able to be client choice. We couldn't let people come through our doors using grocery carts because that would have violated the social distancing. So we moved immediately to a curbside operation. And just about simultaneous with our moving to curbside in March of 2020, the numbers just exploded. So we went from serving 40 families a day to 95 families
a day.
And as part of that emergency response, we follow what the Food Bank of Central and Eastern North Carolina suggests, which is act like you're an emergency program. And that meant that we always knew that temporary food insecurity is something that might last 5 or 6 months. Well, in a pandemic and in a pandemic-induced recession, it's been more than 5 months, of course. But it means that people don't need food once every 3 months, which was our tradition. We said people need food when they need food, and we allowed people to return as frequently as they might need to come. And for some, that was once a month. For some, that was once a week. For some, that became from once a week to twice a month to once a month. And we really trusted people in describing their needs to us. And we served 29,000 duplicated count individuals in a usual year. We're going to probably hit 50,000 or more for 2020, and moving into 2021 with the pandemic really not abating and with the job market really not improving for so many we serve, it's probably going to be the same. Yes, and the food bank really set records in March, April, May. They were serving well over a million or so pounds of food per month. Moving out from the food bank, they're record-setting in terms of what's happening as the food bank, as a wholesaler, pushes food out to the food pantries within a community. So food was the barometer of the distress in our community, and the distress remains high in our community. And yet, as I mentioned earlier, we received support, and we actually cut off food drives for a period of time. In other words, people delivering food product to us because we weren't certain that we could safely really receive the product. And the second issue was that when you start running, really, it's almost a production line, if you will, in order to serve 95 families. And we have some drone footage of our building where you can see the cars wrapping from Capitol Boulevard all the way past the public storage building that's next to us, around our building, into the deep parking lot next to us, coming around to the front of the building. We would serve 95 families in less than 2 hours. And we'd simply run out of food at that 95-family mark or so. And people realized that we could purchase food much easier than they could purchase food from grocery stores, which initially didn't have groceries. We signed contracts with wholesale food providers because the food bank was actually at one point running out of food. So we still are spending $3,000 a week with commercial wholesalers just to keep the product coming in.
We're talking with Dr. Peter Morris, who's the executive director of Urban Ministries of Wake County, about how his organization has been coping with the pandemic and the tremendous human need that's developed as part of it. We talked before we went on the air about the fact that, you know, part of the solution, obviously, to these problems you all deal with on the front lines would be some improvements at the federal and state level when it comes to policy. There are things, perhaps creative things we can do. The Biden administration has taken some steps already to make food assistance somewhat more generous and available. Are there ideas out there that we could be implementing that might actually reduce some of the demand for your services, which I think would be a good thing?
Sure. I'll finish on food for just a second because, you know, even before the Biden administration, and I don't know that people know this, but they made it a bit easier to get SNAP, which is the Supplemental Nutrition and Assistance Program, through Wake County Human Services and through your local social services department. They, too, started taking applications by mail, and really the wait time to get SNAP decreased significantly because they really figured out a way to do it quickly and easily by phone and by mail. They actually, if you had a child in school who would have been eligible for the reduced food breakfast and lunch program, they added the value of that benefit to your SNAP benefit card while schools were out of session. And if you didn't have SNAP benefits, they actually made you eligible for a SNAP benefit card that had a value of those free and reduced lunch programs on that SNAP benefit card. I mean, these were innovations true in the last years of the Trump administration as well. And the fact that the Biden administration has looked at the value of those food benefits, which are still based on the lowest tier of an affordable meal for a family, they really haven't rebased those costs in years and years out of the Department of Agriculture. And all he's really saying is we should probably rebase that. The base was saying that 20% of your income should go for food. And is that really true in terms of some of the cost of a healthy meal? And the initial, back in the Johnson administration, which is where it comes from, 1967,
right,
they said 20% of your income could buy a basic food package for a family of four. And they never said it was a healthy basic food package. They just said it was a basic food package. So all the Biden administration is doing is saying, let's rebase that. And let's rebase that on current food prices. And let's rebase that on somewhat healthier food packages. It's nothing outstanding per se that they're doing. They're just saying perhaps we should look at how we base things. They based, you know, different types of payments on 30% of your income going for housing. Well, let's look at that. In our community, do we really think that we only spend 30% of our income on housing? It's closer to 50% in our community. So whenever these benefits come out for SSI or for even Social Security, we're barely making it on the payments that come to us because housing and food costs more than what the basis for these payments come. To go to other areas where public policy can make a change, of course, we run the Open Door Clinic, which is for uninsured individuals who don't have access to insurance either through a Medicaid expansion. It doesn't look particularly good for a Medicaid expansion, but when Mr. Biden suggested that perhaps the Affordable Care Act could do something more, one of his plans is to say, well, what if we increased subsidies, and what if we move the income level for subsidies lower into the percentage of the federal poverty level? In essence, if you move it to lower incomes, which was under the original ACA, people with as lower incomes were supposed to be eligible for Medicaid. Well, just move the income level down so that people who might have been eligible for Medicaid but can't get it can now get a more generous subsidy, and move the income level higher so that people with higher incomes can get a more generous subsidy. And you can have some pretty competitive private health insurance that people could afford without their employer paying for it. So he's attempting to use the market, if you will, to allow people to afford better health policies, and perhaps with lower deductibles, that being the two challenges of the policies of the ACA, high deductibles and being unable to afford the premiums without subsidy. So that's an innovation that could come out of the Biden administration, depending on what happens with the Senate and the House in terms of what they're willing to pass. For us, the innovations that came, and you know, you hate to say that we were really blinded to innovations because we thought what we did was so good, but I love the fact that our hunger and nutrition program manager said we were so proud of client choice by having people come inside to use shopping carts to pick what they wanted to eat, knowing that there was less food waste. But he said, you know, when we come out of this, maybe there's two types of client choice. The choice of someone wanting a curbside pickup because it's faster for them. Mm-hmm. So maybe we should offer client choice from the curb and client choice from the grocery cart. And our clinic very quickly moved to telehealth. Notice I call it telehealth instead of telemedicine, because we started distributing automated blood pressure monitors to some of our patients who had hard-to-control hypertension. And by distributing those monitors, you didn't have to worry about people not knowing how to take their blood pressure, because the automated monitors do that for you. It involved people directly in their care, so they're taking their blood pressures and reporting their blood pressures to us so we can adjust medications when face-to-face care is more difficult to do because of COVID. And we became more partners in health with people, partners in health with diabetes, partners in health with hypertension. And when people partner in their health and become more inquisitive about why a medicine is or isn't being effective with them, you've got a better dialogue and a better ability to say, well, let's see what might work better. So who knew that? I know it sounds naive, but, you know, our patients who might be considered, you know, quote, less sophisticated and maybe less open to the idea of telehealth love telehealth. It's right. Convenient. They don't have to worry about transportation. They don't have to worry about taking time off from work where they don't get time off from work. They don't have paid leave. And they arrange visits around their breaks at work, and our kept appointment rate, quote unquote, rose and got better. So we don't intend to give up on telehealth, you know, as we bring people back into our building, which we are doing.
We're coming to the end of our time, Dr. Peter Morris of Urban Ministries. I want to ask you one last question, though, Doctor, about health and health policy as we grapple with the pandemic, and that's vaccinations. Now, you all run a pharmacy, you have a clinic. Is there going to be a role at some point for organizations like yours in distributing the vaccine, and perhaps should there be with such a population that's often at high risk?
We hope so, and the way we're doing it right now, or hope to be doing it in the future, I should say, is we have partnered with organizations that have better access to both testing and vaccination. So we have had COVID testing in our site through both the generosity of UNC Rex and through one of the FQHCs in our community called NeighborHealth. And NeighborHealth is beginning to partner with us to be able to provide vaccinations. And we're in contact with WakeMed, who's trying to put more vaccination clinics into 27610 and 27603 and 27604, the sites of traditionally underserved populations, bring the vaccine to where there are individuals who need the vaccine more. And we hope that does mean vaccine will be available to our really an overrepresentation of Latinos and African Americans as well. But getting the vaccine out to where people are, together with churches and civic organizations where the trust level is high, because the relative vaccine hesitancy, it's not really vaccine refusal, it's hesitancy that comes from a lack of trust, and that trust exists with community organizations. And meeting with the community organizations and those organizations saying, I've gotten vaccinated. I trust this vaccine. I trust what it is. And these are trusted providers who've been with us in our zip codes, is the way to have people begin to say, if these people who've been with us all these years are doing this with us where we live, I'm more likely to take this vaccine than it being offered in some more distant fashion by someone lecturing at us rather than being with us.
Well, we wish you all the best in that work, all the fine work you do at Urban Ministries. Folks can check you out at urbanmin.org, right?
That's right. That's our website. And we just redid our website, and there's some wonderful storytelling videos there about how people have to pivot during these times and be willing to relook at vision and mission and say, we're called to do things differently, and we're called to do things the way our neighbors in need need them to be done. Not just to hang on the way we think they should be done, but to listen better and to act better on their behalf because they're asking us to do so.
Well, amen to that. We'll talk again, I hope, in the near future. Hopefully share some successes. Hopefully we'll be a little further along in the process. But thanks so much for all you do, and take care of yourself.
Thank you. Thanks for having us on.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Remember, you can check us out online and subscribe to our free newsletters at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. Please wear your mask, stay safe as best you can, and we'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.